Good morning, church. Elizabeth Norton wanted to play on her school's volleyball team, and her mother let her. Elizabeth didn't make the team the first time she tried out in seventh grade, but after a summer of intense practice, she made it the next year. But to be honest, Elizabeth wasn't such a great player. She was so skinny that her principal described her as frail. But she had heart and drive, and her mother supported her, driving her all over their suburban Florida county. Now, Elizabeth was a happy girl with near-perfect grades, and she was popular with all her classmates. She'd been elected homecoming princess and was named class president 2 years in a row. Always supportive of her daughter, Elizabeth's mother, Jessica, had taken a job at the same school as a library media clerk. But then something happened. An armed officer showed up to tell Jessica that she was under investigation. District leaders banned her from the building, moving her to a different job doing maintenance in a warehouse, and scheduled disciplinary hearings to see if she would keep her job. Now, clearly, she must have done something quite serious to be facing termination. After all, in previous disciplinary actions by the school district, adults who had abused children had served only 1 to 5 day suspensions. And another teacher who had slapped a child received only a letter of reprimand. So what was this terrible thing that Jessica had done that could cost her her job? She'd allowed her daughter, a transgender child, to play on the girls' volleyball team. But let's set the stage a little bit. Elizabeth, as you probably guessed, was born male. But almost as soon as she could talk, she told her parents she was a girl. She loved mermaids and sports, and she seemed to know exactly who she was. According to her mother, Elizabeth was consistent, persistent, and insistent that she was a girl. Initially, her parents fought it. But around age 6, they started letting her wear her sister's outfits. Her parents had never seen her so happy. Elizabeth later said of her transition, "It was the best time of my life. I got to be who I was born to be." But as Elizabeth neared her teenage years, her mother began to worry what would happen during puberty. So they found a doctor who prescribed a monthly testosterone-blocking shot, which prevented the physical changes that boys typically undergo. Her parents changed her name and gender marker, and she lived pretty much as a normal, happy girl. That is, until a conservative county school board member somehow learned that a transgender student was playing girl sports in violation of Florida's recently passed Fairness in Women's Sports Act. And that's when things spiraled out of control. That's when the conservative establishment seemingly set out to do as much damage as possible to this previously happy family and this child. The media reported the story, including Jessica's name, so everyone was soon aware of her trans daughter. Jessica was accused of falsifying records by listing her child's gender as female. And she was interrogated by investigators who repeatedly referred to Elizabeth as her son, using pronouns he and even it to refer to the child, and talking about Elizabeth as if she were dangerous. And for all the anguish and confusion that Jessica faced, it was much worse for her daughter, Elizabeth. Elizabeth stayed home and read hateful comments on the internet. She spent a lot of her time in bed crying. She could no longer play sports. Her grades suffered. She was afraid of being bullied or worse if she returned to school. Would she have a prom and graduation, senior pictures, and the other hallmarks of a teenage life? Probably not. Because even now, several years later, she and her family are still suffering. and all because she wanted to be, as she described it, who she was born to be. We're in the midst of a sermon series based on Noel Mehring's book, Awake, Not Woke, A Christian Response to the Cult of Progressive Ideology. And like the book, we've been discussing some hot-button issues and trying to find, as the subtitle of our sermon series says, grace in the divide. In the past few weeks, we've touched on education, Hollywood, race, sex, feminism, and other issues that divide us. And Reverend Karen asked me to speak this week about transgender issues. But I have to say right up front that as a cisgender male, I certainly can't claim to be any expert on the lives of my transgender brothers and sisters. I simply don't encounter the world through the experience of living as a trans person. I can offer my support, but they walk a journey that I don't walk and can probably never completely understand. All I can offer is my own perspective as a caring ally on the issues they face as I understand them, and my thoughts about what my faith tells me must be God's perspective on this issue. So with that proviso, let's get started. You know, if you've been watching TV lately, no doubt you've heard some claims that transgender folks are a huge threat to decency, fairness, American values, probably apple pie. For example, there's a heated race in progress in Texas for a U.S. Senate seat. Senator Ted Cruz is currently seeking re-election against Democratic challenger Congressman Colin Allred. Now, it's not like Texas doesn't have any problems. According to a recent ranking of U.S. states, Texas was near the bottom in home ownership, education, health insurance, safety, and affordability. And yet, for some time, the only campaign ad I saw from Senator Cruz was one accusing Representative Allred of not knowing the difference between boys and girls. And this is apparently because Representative Allred voted for the Equality Act, which would prevent discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. According to the ad, that means Allred is okay with, quote, boys and girls bathrooms, boys and girls locker rooms, boys and girls sports. Oh my. And unfortunately, Representative Allred's response hasn't been the best either. In his response ad, he said that he certainly doesn't want, quote, boys playing girls sports, unquote. So despite his long-standing support for LGBTQ plus rights, his response raised concern among some activists. For example, Jeff Charlotte, self-described proud dad of a trans kid, responded that no one can tell him that, quote, my kid or others are expendable for the sake of holding the Senate, unquote. So for whatever reason, it seems the outcome of a U.S. Senate race may hinge on issues related to trans folks, a group that represents less than 1% of the population. Why? Are they really such a threat to American civilization and Christian values? Of course not. Far from being a threat to decency and public order, most trans folks just want to be left alone to live their lives. Think about Elizabeth Norden. Most of her friends and neighbors would never have known that she was trans if not for a campaign orchestrated by a conservative school board member. What's really going on? Well, certainly it's true that Elizabeth playing on a girls' volleyball team was technically a violation of Florida's so-called Fairness in Women's Sports Act. But why was such a law passed in the first place? After all, trans athletes are very rare. According to a Washington Post article, quote, a 2021 Associated Press analysis of 20 proposed state bans found that legislators in most couldn't point to a single trans athlete in their own region. And in Florida, state records show that just two trans girls had played girls' sports over the last decade, a bowler who graduated in 2019 and Elizabeth Norden, unquote. Could it be that there's something behind these nearly identical laws in half the states other than protecting women's sports? Could it be nothing more than a crass political calculation designed to stir up voters? Surely politicians couldn't be that cynical. Surely they wouldn't target a vulnerable population just to gain a few votes, would they? But unfortunately, political actions can do grievous damage to real people. A recent study showed an increase of up to 72% in suicide attempts by transgender and non-binary youth following the passage of anti-trans laws. When compared to their peers, transgender youth suffer more social isolation, have impaired educational access and achievement, and as a result, have limited economic opportunities for life. Transgender people of all ages suffer higher rates of emotional and psychological abuse, physical and sexual violence, sexually transmitted diseases, substance abuse, and mental health problems, including depression, anxiety, and thoughts of suicide. The trans community is an easy target. According to a poll by the University of Houston, a majority of Texans disapprove of allowing trans folks to choose which bathroom to use, participate in women's sports, or receive gender-affirming care as minors. But we shouldn't be surprised about that when we're constantly exposed to a hateful caricature of trans life as men in dresses lurking in women's bathrooms and teenage boys pretending to be trans to access the girls' locker rooms. Really? Do these people know any teenage boys? Or how hard it is to be a trans teenager? With all of the challenges trans folks face, why would anybody pretend to be trans? And why deny someone the opportunity to live a more authentic and well-integrated life, including access to compassionate medical care? It just seems cruel and unnecessary. But let's address the issue of trans women in sports. It's not as clear-cut as you might think on either side. Males, at least those who go through puberty, do have a physical advantage over females. And I've already told you that I'm no expert on transgender experience, so I'll quote from someone who is. Laurie Suzanne Scott is a transgender woman who lives here in Austin and has a blog on transgender issues entitled Transfigured Hearts. Here's what she says. Quote, it's not transphobic to use common sense that genetic males shouldn't compete in physical sports intended for genetic females. Yes, if they're taking female hormones, that will over time reduce their muscle mass, but they will always have more than a genetic female. We have to accept that not everyone can have everything they want all the time, unquote. You know, that seems pretty reasonable to me. But note that Laurie is talking here about men who transition after puberty, not someone like Elizabeth Norden, who has the same hormonal profile as a typical teenage girl. And by the way, the only established driver of athletic advantage of men over women is testosterone, which surges in males during puberty. The irony is that by prohibiting gender-affirming care for minors, puberty blockers in particular, we lock in those advantages that contribute to the very unfairness that conservatives rail against. But in case you're wondering, this isn't a political speech, it's a sermon. So let's talk about how religion fuels all this. Many conservative Christians view being transgender as contrary to God's will. And they'll typically cite Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God were they created, Male and female, God created them. Now, we're supposed to interpret that as definitive. God created male and female. You were born one or the other. So that must be how God wants it. But notice that it doesn't say male or female, God created them. Rather, it says male and female. And some theologians have interpreted that to mean that human beings, like the God in whose image we are created, have both masculine and feminine characteristics. Each of us is male and female to some extent. So why should we be surprised that some folks have a male body but a female spirit, or vice versa? And it's simply not the case that all human beings are born unambiguously male or female. Biological gender is not as binary as many would have you believe. Some studies suggest that those born with ambiguous gender make up 1 to 2% of the population. Just because God created dark and light doesn't mean there's no dawn or twilight. Perhaps this diversity of gender expression is simply another aspect of the marvelous and varied rainbow creation we see all around us. Many non-Christian religious traditions embrace the non-binary aspect of human gender diversity. Transgender men and women are recognized and accepted in many Islamic cultures around the world. Many Native American religions embrace what they call two-spirit people. And in Hindu society in South Asia, people of non-binary gender have been recognized for millennia and revered. And even within Christianity, many denominations have come to accept gender diversity, welcoming gender diverse members and even ordaining transgender clergy. We certainly have in MCC. So the notion that God frowns on gender diversity is certainly not universal. But another thing conservative Christians are fond of saying is that God doesn't make mistakes. I guess that's supposed to mean that God made you either male or female on purpose, and it's sick or sinful to tinker with God's handiwork. God doesn't make mistakes, they say. You know, it's funny, but I've never once heard any religious conservative use that expression when talking about a child born blind or with congenital abnormalities or birth defects. And very few Christians would deny medically appropriate treatment to such children. And they certainly don't speak of such children as if their condition is the result of sin. They see disease and disability as tragedies, not as departures from God's good creation, but as integral parts of it. So what's so special about gender? For whatever reason, they refuse to acknowledge that gender dysphoria is also a very real condition that can also lead to intense suffering. So I ask again, why would you ever deny someone the right to live a more authentic and well-integrated life or withhold the compassionate medical care that could make that possible? And of course, many religious conservatives will tell you that someone like young Elizabeth Norden is simply confused about her gender identity. She'll grow out of it, they say. Well, I certainly agree that someone's confused. But it's not Elizabeth. Remember, she was consistent, persistent, and insistent about her gender identity from a very young age. And her transition was a joyous, life-changing occasion. Why would anybody want to deny her the gender-affirming care that was already making such a difference in her young life? I looked for something in Scripture relevant to this issue. And what I found was John's Gospel, chapter 9. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered them, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that the works of God might be revealed in him. We must work the works of the one who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. Then he went and washed and came back able to see. What a wonderful story. And isn't it a magnificent testimony to the physicality of Jesus and his ministry? He mixes dirt and saliva into a healing poultice for this man's eyes. And once this fellow washes the mud out of his eyes, he's healed and he sees for the first time in his life. How remarkable is that? But to me, the rest of this chapter is no less remarkable. People start saying, "Isn't that the blind beggar we've always known?" But others say, "No, that can't be him. It's just someone who looks like him. After all, our guy's blind." And they bring him to the Pharisees, who question him about what's happened. "Jesus gave me back my sight," he says. "He's a prophet." But they still don't trust his testimony. And they even summon his parents, and they say, "Yes, this is our son who was born blind, but now he can see. We don't know how this happened, but he's a grown man. Ask him yourself." And he tells them, "Here's an astonishing thing. You say you don't trust this Jesus. You say you don't know where this Jesus is coming from, and yet he opened my eyes. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." But they don't want to hear this, and they drive him away. Sad, isn't it? These politicians and religious authorities aren't willing to listen to the formerly blind man, the one person in the world who should know best what's happening to him. He spent his entire life in darkness, and now he can see. And even his parents say, "Ask him yourself, he's a grown man." And still they discount his testimony. They think they know better. Does any of that sound familiar? It should, because that's exactly what happens to trans folks. Didn't young Elizabeth Norden tell them, persistently, consistently, and insistently, that she was just being exactly who she was born to be? Didn't her parents testify that she'd never been happier? And yet the politicians and religious figures thought they knew better. You may remember a quote that Reverend Karen shared with us a couple weeks ago from author and scholar Brené Brown. Quote, "Rather than walking in your shoes, I need to learn to listen to the story you tell about what it's like in your shoes and believe you even when it doesn't match my experiences." Unquote. I need to learn to listen to the story you tell and believe you even when it doesn't match my experiences. That's it in a nutshell, isn't it? As a cisgender person, I have no personal experience of gender dysphoria, but that doesn't give me the right to say it's not real, or to say you're simply confused about what you're feeling. You, my friends, are the world experts on your life. So don't let anyone tell you that your experience is not valid just because it doesn't match theirs. And who understands better the life experiences of transgender individuals than those individuals themselves? And yet, politicians and religious authorities are just unwilling to listen. They have the temerity to tell trans folks either that their deeply felt experience isn't real, or that they're sick, sinful, or confused. I agree, God doesn't make mistakes. But people certainly do. They make them all the time. And it seems to me that one of the greatest mistakes is not accepting the testimony of someone about their own life experience just because it doesn't match ours. I want to say one more thing on this subject. Recall that this sermon series is called Grace in the Divide. I'm personally not very inclined to offer much grace to those politicians and religious leaders who should know better. but are willing to use a vulnerable community as a punching bag. But for many of their followers who have been misled and misinformed about the nature of transgender people, I think we should extend them grace and try gently to bring them around. Far too many good people of faith still believe the lies they've been told by their political and religious leaders about trans folks. And let's offer some grace to ourselves when we make honest mistakes, like using the wrong pronouns or misgendering someone because of our ignorance. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine, a wonderful, caring, retired chaplain, edited a collection of women's reflections on their own spiritual journeys. As she prepared a second volume, she decided she wanted to include testimonies from transgender women. And she asked me to suggest anyone I knew who might want to contribute. Well, I shopped her request around to some of the local therapists who work with transgender clients. And one therapist responded that she wouldn't insult her clients by even extending this offer. And why? Because my friend used the word transgendered instead of transgender. Really, I thought? You dismiss a caring ally because she didn't use exactly the right language? You deny transgender women the opportunity to publish accounts of their own spiritual journeys? I hate to say it, but this is exactly the kind of thing that gives woke a bad name. So let's be a bit gracious with each other. Let's educate rather than denigrate. And let's remember what Jesus said of that blind beggar. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. And I can easily imagine Jesus saying of a trans person, they were born trans so that God's works might be revealed in them. And perhaps also so that our humanity might be revealed in us as we help them to become, as young Elizabeth Norden said, exactly who they were born to be. Amen.